Hello, I'm Jamie Tennant. This is number 0718, the Stuff File Program, with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0718. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet Sebastian de Castell, who is the author of the fantasy novel, The Malevolent Seven.
It's a story about seven of these wondrists, these mercenary mages, who are all pretty much convinced that they're, if not the bad guys, then they're certainly not the heroes, and that there's no point in trying. And they end up getting hired for a job that none of them particularly want to do, but they sort of get tricked into, only to discover that this job entails dealing with a different group of wizards, the most powerful the world's ever seen, who are intent on either destroying or enslaving all of humanity.
Kai Michelson is an inventor who has created several odd items. His latest one is the beer-powered motorcycle. Kai has been inventing weird things since he was a kid.
Actually, it goes way back to the day when I was in grade school. I'm dyslexic, and they didn't know what dyslexia was. They couldn't teach me to read and write. I had a really tough time at school, and seeing my math book did me no good, I cut it out, and I built a radio inside of it, and I brought it to school, and the teacher freaked out, and then she got to the point that she couldn't believe that I built that. And, I got positive. It's the first positive thing I ever got out of the teacher's mouth, and that was building stuff. I'm 84 years old. I've been building stuff all my life.
Ron Dagenfelder is the owner and operator of the Puzzle Barn, where you can rent hundreds of jigsaw puzzles from his converted chicken coop. How did the idea begin?
I'm the type of person that does the puzzle just once. I know I can donate them, but I was just keeping them in the garage in bins, and we had this chicken coop I converted into the Puzzle Barn. We were using it for storage and just got this crazy idea. I remember back in the day, Blockbuster video stores where you rent videos, and also a combination of like a vegetable stand where people just stop by, pull in, always open. And so I put the two ideas together and created this Puzzle Barn.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0718, was Jamie Tennant, the program director at CFMU 93.3 FM in Hamilton, Ontario, which plays the Stuff File program every Thursday at 2 p.m. Thank you very much, Jamie, for doing the guest late. And more importantly, thank you very much for playing the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff. On May 9th, officers from Boone County and Watauga County, North Carolina, tried to chase down 34-year-old Joshua Minton after he was pulled over for reckless driving. Minton ran into an underdeveloped area where law enforcement got an unlikely helping. Hoof. As posted on the police Facebook page, cows in the field quickly assisted our officers by leading them directly to where the suspect was hiding. The cows communicated with the officers as best they could, and finally just had the officers follow them to the suspect's location.
Which way did it go? Which way did it go?
Minton was arrested on multiple charges. So I guess it started with a moving violation that led to utter apprehension. Spring weather can be unpredictable, but a man in Ankara, Turkey, got an up-close glimpse at exactly what intense winds can do on May the 17th. As Onur Kalmaz looked out his window, trying to check on his car during the storm, he captured on video a sofa flying from a balcony of a 35-story block of apartments nearby. Kalmaz said the sofa crashed into other buildings before falling to the ground. No one was hurt, but we were pretty scared, he said. You know, some of that wicker outdoor furniture can be pretty light, so it's not too surprising that a sofa from a 35-story building might go aloft. It would have been more interesting if he had seen Margaret Hamilton riding a bicycle in the storm. By the way, I have placed the video on the Stuff File Facebook page and also the Twitter pages so you can see for yourself. When a 35-year-old woman in Providence, Rhode Island, couldn't afford conventional dental care for her painful teeth, a friend recommended Yorkie. So the woman contacted 57-year-old Altagracia Yorkis Adames and went to her home basement dental practice. And I'm doing air quotes when I say dental practice.
Hi there. Is this your first trip to the dentist? You a little scared?
There, Yorkie allegedly removed instruments from a dresser drawer, some that were visibly rusty, then numbed the victim's molar and pulled on it until it came out. She then numbed and drilled on the patient's front teeth. Later that night, when her pain worsened, she texted with Yorkie, who told her to take painkillers and ice her mouth. The next day, the victim checked into a hospital and was told she was very sick. Police said Yorkie was a licensed dentist in the Dominican Republic, but not licensed in Rhode Island. She was arrested. She is due back in court in August. Wow. I bet that patient is a little down in the mouth.
The dentist.
There now. Better?
As you know, nothing bad ever happens at Disney World.
Welcome to the happiest place on Earth, where you're happy is everywhere.
And you probably know why that is.
Because this place has all the happy you never knew could exist.
But as happy as that place is, unfortunately, it still has to deal with, you know, people. Two families went at each other on May the 15th at Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom all over who could stand next to a sign commemorating the 100th anniversary of the Disney Company.
Here is where 100 years of Disney dreams come to life.
Unfortunately, life can suck. According to police, one family was standing in front of the sign when another group wanted to snap a photo. When the second group asked the first to step aside, punches were thrown. At least one person was treated for injuries at the site, but they didn't want to press charges. Two people were removed from the park. Well, when you visit the land of Mickey, you're bound to find some people who are just plain goofy.
Welcome to your happiest place on Earth, only at the Disneyland Resort.
Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Sebastian De Castell is the author of a novel with a very ominous title. It's called The Malevolent Seven, and it deals with wizards. Sebastian joins us via Zoom from Vancouver. Hi, Sebastian.
Hi, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. I've seen various pictures of you, and I've seen various titles that you have, and it seems that you have a passion for swashbuckling.
I do. I don't know where it came from. If I was smart, I would say, you know, it emerged from my first reading of The Three Musketeers, followed by my love of Sabatini in the 30s. But it probably came out of The Princess Bride, which is now a less nerdy thing to say than it used to be. But I think I just kind of fell in love with that swashbuckling spirit that we're faced with overwhelming problems. So rather than approach them cynically, let's find the most daring, exotic way to try to solve this situation. And so The Great Coats, which was my first series, is a swashbuckling fantasy series about these traveling judges who have to duel to maintain their verdicts in this very sort of corrupt society. And now with Malevolent Seven, even though it's a very sort of anti-heroic kind of tale of seven mercenary mages who are called wonderists in this world and sell their spells to the highest bidder, Even there, I just found that swashbuckling spirit just sort of permeated the writing. So I think it's just something that I love it when I can get to read it. And so it just infuses my fiction.
You also are into wizards and magic, which is what this book deals with. So tell us what The Malevolent Seven is all about.
It's a story about seven of these wondrists, these mercenary mages, who are all pretty much convinced that they're, if not the bad guys, then they're certainly not the heroes, and that there's no point in trying. And they end up getting hired for a job that none of them particularly want to do, but they sort of get tricked into, only to discover that this job entails dealing with a different group of wizards, the most powerful the world's ever seen, who are intent on basically either destroying or enslaving all of humanity. And so these seven mercenaries who want at all costs to avoid having to be heroic are forced, as all of us are sometimes, to having to take the role of the hero and do the best they can.
Is writing something you've always wanted to do? Because I know that you got a degree in archaeology, and I'm just wondering if that led to your writing, because you have an interest in fantasy and things that, well, can lend themselves to archaeology.
I wish I could say that was true. I was never the kid that, you know, wrote his first novel at 13 or anything like that. I was terrible. At concentrating on anything for any length of time. It wasn't until I was 27, I was working in a rock band, touring band that was making, I was making like $250 a week playing Brown Eyed Girl six times a night, and was getting sued by the bass player for control of the band, that I felt like my life was just really spiraling out of control. So I went to a library, which is, you know, what I always do when things get confusing. And I found a box of book tapes by a mystery author named Ralph McInerney, and it was called Let's Write a Mystery. And I had to find a cassette player to put these things into. And he just walked you through writing a book. And I went, you know, why not give it a try? Like, take the challenge. And I wrote this novel, and it was absolutely terrible. And no human being should ever have to read it. It was called Skeletons in the Cloister, which, when I told my first agent about this, she said, oh, I could sell that book. And I said, no, it's a terrible book. And she said, yeah, but it's a great title. So years later, I decided to write another book, which became Traitor's Blade, and that kind of launched my career. So I came at this through, I think a lot of authors do, through a very sort of winding path, where I think eventually you just have so many experiences that you've gone through. I worked in all these different professions, from teaching to being the most rapidly failing archaeologist of all time. I went on my first dig and literally 4 hours later decided I was never going to be an archaeologist again. To being a musician, to choreographing sword fights for the theater. And you just have all these experiences that aren't fully processed. And at some point you go, I've got to do something with all this. And it just somehow winds its way into a book.
And the things you just described that you've done in your life is almost like a word salad. One thing doesn't necessarily lead to the next.
They do have a sort of a connection. When I was 16 years old, I was really lost, which you could probably already tell is a frequent theme in my life. And I was camping by myself on an island off the coast of British Columbia, and I found this book called Bard by Keith Taylor, who's an Australian fantasy author. And I was 4 hours early for a ferry, and I sat there and read about this wandering bard who would travel the world and go on adventures and sing songs and play music and tell stories and get into sword fights. And so I knew instantly that was the job for me. Unfortunately, all my perusing of the newspapers and the Help Wanted ads failed to find a posting for a bard. And so over the course of, the subsequent decades, I took up fencing and as I say, choreographed sword fights for the theater. I became a musician. I traveled all over the world and different places. And I went on all these kind of wild adventures and eventually became an author. So I think I managed to become a bard in the aggregate. It just took, 40 years.
Well, what led you to archaeology in the first place?
When I first joined archaeology at Simon Fraser University, that department, I remember one of the admissions people there saying, and this will answer your question neatly, saying, yeah, this happens every time there's a new Indiana Jones movie. And that's literally what it was. It's, you couldn't have a worse, most immature reason for doing something, but it was that sort of longing for adventure that I had, that at first kind of sparked in me in reading that book, Bard, when I was 16, that kind of just kept pulling me towards different situations that were different or exciting or adventurous or risky. And archaeology was one of them.
Well, you talk about the interesting things that have taken place in your life and the various travels that you've done. How much of your past works its way into your novels like The Malevolent Seven?
I think what's interesting about writing is that you can try to sort of intellectually figure out as you're writing why it is you're writing or what you're really writing about. But I'm always wrong. And by the time I finished Malevolent Seven, I knew what it was about. When I started, my thinking was just, you know what? I've just finished a 6-book young adult series where with every book, restrictions on what language you could use were getting tighter and tighter. And, you know, in young adult fiction, you can have all the murder and horrible torture you want, but you can't use swear words. And so I was just like, I'm going to write this book and it's just, there's going to be more swear words per page than any other fantasy novel around. And I thought that was kind of what was driving it, was a sort of feeling of, I'm just going to have some fun and rebel against the things that I feel like are getting a little bit oppressive when it comes to fiction lately. But in fact, what I realized by the end was I was writing about what happens when people decide they're the bad guys. You know, we live in this time where we're tending to divide each other up into the good guys and the bad guys. And the bad guys is basically anybody who we can ever discover has done something wrong. And you don't get to be a good guy again after you've been a bad guy, right? We don't have that same sort of notion of redemption. And so I thought, well, you know, what would happen in a world where all of a sudden you kind of needed the bad guys to step up and to be heroic, because otherwise, you know, we're all going to kind of die. And so I think what I found myself exploring was more that feeling of, I wonder what happens to all these, especially like a lot of young guys now, but it's happening with young women as well, who are just early on being convinced that, you know, because they've done something stupid or bad for which they should rightfully be sorry and they should rightfully make amends. But somehow decide that they're just fundamentally broken or bad people. And, you know, what's going to happen when we're relying on that generation to kind of take over and save us all from our own mistakes? So that's really what came out in that book. And that just goes to show what I was saying, was that you almost never know what it is you're writing about until you hit the end.
Well, in discovering the theories through your writing of what it is you're trying to get out and what you discover that you do get out in your books, like The Malevolent Seven, do you discover anything during the writing process about yourself?
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing you find, especially when you're writing fantasy, people will sometimes ask me, do you build the hero, the main characters around yourself? And in fact, all the characters are coming out of you. They're all part of you. You realize that you are the villain in your own life, and you're the hero in your own life, and you're the sidekick in your own life. And so, when my first book, that Skeletons in the Cloister, I remember I finished the manuscript and I, you know, printed it out and I set down the last page and I thought, I have some really bad attitudes about people that I've discovered in this book. And I think that what I discovered with Malevolent Seven was the sense that Cade, who's the main character and our narrator in that book, is constantly thinking of himself as a bad guy and as being sort of irredeemable. He has a very mysterious past that sort of comes out over the course of the book. And what I kind of discovered was, which I seriously wasn't even intending to write as I was doing it, but that's what was coming out, was this is a character who is evading their own responsibilities to their fellow human beings by telling themselves, hey, I'm not the hero. I'm a screw up. I'm a bad guy. And that I think I do that sometimes in my own life as well. It's a lot easier to just tell yourself be self-deprecating than it is to step up. And so that's what I learned writing Malevolent Seven, and which is an odd thing because it's a book full of a lot of irreverent humor and action and adventure and sort of wild magic. But at the end of the day, it's about people who are trying to reconcile who they think they are with the responsibilities ahead of them.
Well, Sebastian, I could talk to you all day, but we're out of time. But the book is again called The Malevolent Seven, a fascinating topic indeed. I thank you very, very much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you so much.
Sebastian De Castell, author of The Malevolent Seven. You can go to my website at thestuffwild.com to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0718, and you'll find links to Sebastian's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. And Patreon subscribers, we have a different kind of Patreon reward extra. Most of the times when we do this, it's usually a conversation that carries on after we do an interview. But this was a conversation we had before the interview even started, and a little afterwards as well. We just got very chatty and very personal. So to hear it, you can go to our Patreon page, and if you're not already a member, become one of the select patrons of the show. Visit patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holden.
There's still more guests, more news, and an idiot of the day coming your way on The Stuff File Program. Stay tuned. The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're experiencing The Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the inventor of the beer-powered motorcycle, and we'll also touch base with the owner and operator of the Puzzle Barn, where you can rent jigsaw puzzles. We have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and much more in Stuff File News right here, right now. Roman Rustin, a nurse in Perry, Iowa, called the police. A wild rabbit had bitten her and then chased a neighbor. Police confirmed the rabbit has been around terrorizing people. Police said the bunny also bit a 13-year-old girl who would have to get rabies shots. Rustin isn't bothering with the shots because she says, "When it bit me, I didn't see it frothing at the mouth." Police caught the ornery hare and let it go near the city's wastewater treatment plant and said they don't know if it has rabies. Yeah, that's good planning because, you know, testing the bad bunny before releasing it would be too much trouble to help a girl avoid unnecessary shots or confirm a woman doesn't need them. Also, releasing it at the city's wastewater treatment plant? Oh, dear Lord, have none of these people seen the 1972 horror flick starring Janet Leigh about giant man-eating rabbits?
What caused the unnatural death, destruction, and panic that night of the Lepus? Janet Leigh, Stuart Whitman, Rory Calhoun. Night of the Lepus. Kill one, and thousands take their place. What devil creatures growing weight and size every day are hidden behind the eyes of horror? What can stop them? Night of the Lepus. From MGM.
Iowa, you've been warned. Neighbors were a little suspicious about embellished haircuts in Hanover Township, Pennsylvania. The salon seemed to be open pretty late at night, and the proprietor put up curtains in all the windows to block the view. Plus, when customers left after their appointments, their hair didn't seem any shorter. When one neighbor searched the company online, she found reviews of its sexual services, she called police. State troopers investigated and say Amy Zlobin admitted she sells sex to make money for her and her daughter. She was arrested on a misdemeanor charge and released. You know, when customers left, their hair wasn't shorter, but it was messier. And this brings new meaning to the term, a little off the top. The Los Angeles Philharmonic was performing Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony at the Walt Disney Concert Hall when there was suddenly a commotion from the balcony. Composer and music producer Magnus Fiennes described it as a woman having a loud and full body orgasm. Another said it was wonderfully timed to a romantic swell in the music. Molly Grant was sitting near the woman and saw the girl after it had happened, she said, and her partner was smiling and looking at her like in an effort to not shame her. It was quite beautiful. And through it all, the orchestra played on. Well, the orchestra also continued playing on the Titanic when it went down. This is like when Harry met Sally at the Philharmonic.
I'll have what she's having.
And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Christy Hutchinson, a resident of Hawaii, was helping her husband pull their boat out of the water in Kalua Kona on the Big Island when she saw a tourist headed the other way on the boat ramp toward the water at a pretty decent speed. Hutchinson grabbed her phone to start making a video and observed it was so confidently done. They didn't have a look of panic on their face. They were still smiling. Her husband and others dove into the water to rescue the occupants and secure their vehicle. The tourists said that they were following their GPS navigator, which told them to turn there. They were trying to find a company that does manta ray diving tours. Said State Department of Transportation spokeswoman Samantha Tavares, usually GPS is pretty accurate in Hawaii, but she offered this bit of advice. If you see a body of water, don't drive towards it. You know, Samantha is just stating the obvious, but in cases involving GPS, often the obvious needs to be stated.
Recalculating because you are a moron.
Yeah, anyway. Let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Kai Michelson is an inventor. He has created such items as a rocket-powered toilet and a jet-powered coffee pot. His latest creation is a motorcycle that is powered by beer. Kai joins us via Zoom from Minnesota. Hi, Kai.
Hey, how you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us, sir. The first question I have to ask right off the bat when talking about a beer-powered motorcycle and inventing it, the first question has to be, why?
Well, I don't drink beer, and the price of gas kind of put two and two together. What do you need? You got to build something that runs on beer. Consequently, we built a motorcycle that runs on beer.
As I mentioned in some of the other things you've created before, you really create unique items. How did this all get started for you in the first place?
Well, actually, it goes way back to the day when I was in grade school. I'm dyslexic, and they didn't know what dyslexia was, and they couldn't teach me to read and write. I had a really tough time in school, and seeing my math book did me no good, I cut it out, and I built a radio inside of it, and I brought it to school, and the teacher freaked out, and then she got to the point that she couldn't believe that I built that. And, you know, I got positive, so the first positive thing I ever got out of the teacher's mouth. And that was building stuff. You know, I'm 84 years old. I've been building stuff all my life. You know, I brought to school. I took my mother's pickle jar, put a piece of wood in the bottom, the top, put two nails through it. I plugged it in 110 with a hot dog, and I called it Kaiser Cremator. You could cook hot dogs in a minute or something like that. But I've always been a creative guy. I've always thought of things that haven't been built before, and that's what I like. I like the weird things. That's kind of my deal.
Well, on this show, we like weird as well. So let's get to the motorcycle. Again, you said you created this to run on beer, but I understand that you could build something to run on any liquid.
Yeah, that's true. But right now I'm just concentrating on the beer deal. We'll see what comes out of it. See, the idea of this was to go to a bar, you know, a good biker bar, grab the guy's beers and pour them into the gas tank. But it really doesn't go in the gas tank. It goes into the frame rail down inside where the keg is. And inside that keg is a high pressure vessel with a heater core. And it heats that beer up at 400 degrees, 300 degrees. And then when you open up the throttle valve, it goes through these two side pipes, the converging, diverging nozzles. Once that beer hits the atmosphere, it expands 1,600 times and pushes against the nozzle, which thus gives you thrust and makes you go.
Now, I've seen the YouTube videos where you test this thing out in a standing situation where it's loaded on a platform. I haven't seen any videos where you've actually taken it on the road. Have you done this?
Well, we will. See, here, you know, we're up in Minnesota with all the snow, and we had the thing apart. We put it in a car show, which actually won first prize for that and a sweepstakes with that vehicle through the engineering of it. But we will be doing that, yes. We've run a lot of stuff out here in Minneapolis. I should say Bloomington, Minnesota. Rocket-powered roller skates, rocket-powered bike, rocket-powered motorcycles, all skates, wheelchairs. We've flown an outhouse, full-size outhouse. We've flown a full-size coffin. So nothing's really sacred. Yeah, we put rockets on everything.
It sounds like you're a more successful Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah, I'm still around. You know, you hear this joke. The story about a guy putting a Jato bottle on a Chevrolet, and he lit it up, and he went flying off a cliff. This story's been around for 30, 40 years. Well, I took a Jato bottle and put it on a sled and went for a ride on it.
Wow. So,
but, you know, my biggest claim, the thing that I'm actually the most proud of, we're the first civilians to ever get licensed by the federal government to put a rocket into space. And tomorrow will be the 19th anniversary of that. We beat Burt Rutan by about 20 days. It was just guys in their garage, build a rocket, and put it 72 miles up, 3,420 miles an hour.
Getting back to this beer-powered motorcycle, I've seen on stories where it says you can basically make anything, any kind of liquid. So is it possible to power this motorcycle with just simple water?
Sure. Coffee, water, anything that pours soda. We'll probably try that. Well, not in this particular one, but I'll work towards that and something else I've got in mind right now.
Because as you know, when it comes to liquids, water is extremely cheap.
Yeah, I know. I made a lot of money off of water. Actually,
aren't the gasoline companies looking at you, you know, slightly askew, going, "Wait a minute, is he going to put us out of business?"
Well, I don't know. If you come around my house, you see all the bars on the windows and the steel gate with the lock on it. I don't know. Who knows?
Do you drive a simple standard car, or did you create something for your own personal vehicle as well?
Well, right now I drive a 1930 Chevrolet with the steering on the right-hand side. It came out of New Zealand. So that's our current vehicle, and maybe a Corvette and a few other toys are out there, yes.
Wow. I got to ask, what are your neighbors like? Do they think, oh, there goes Kai again? Are they used to all the things that you do?
Yeah, the problem is, I broke them in one by one, but the problem is that they're all dying off fast around here. We're getting new neighbors, so I got to break down that could be a problem. I don't know.
Now, you've also continued doing all these things with your son, correct?
Yes, my son Buddy is actually, his legal name is Rocket Man. It's Buddy Rocket Man Michelson. That's his legal name.
Wow. And has he had the proficiency that you had from childhood when he was a kid himself? In other words, was he the kind of kid that could always build things just like you did?
Yeah, he's actually way ahead of me. You know, at his age now, he's got a heck of a head start. Who knows what direction and how far he'll go, but the sky's the limit, I'll tell you that. If he keeps thinking, the way that we think, he's just going to improve and continue to build things. He's already been in every state in the United States and, I don't know, six different countries. We actually put two rockets in the space. The other one we did 2014. He worked on that rocket.
So what is your goal here with this beer-powered motorcycle? Now that you've built it, what do you want to become of it? How do you want to get it out there? Do you want to reach out to beer companies? What's the deal?
Eventually, we may do that. A number of years back, 2014, for Nakasi Beer, we actually launched their East into space, and then they brought it back and made a beer. And who knows, maybe they'll come to us, or one of the beer companies will come to us. But, you know, it's all about building unique things. But my really number one goal in life is this. I'm dyslexic. I had a tough time at school. I was called stupid, dumb, I don't want your kind around. And that put a chip on my shoulder, and it gave me the drive. So I don't want to have nobody to feel sorry because I'm dyslexic, because that's a good thing if you use it the right way. So I like to motivate kids. And our house is like a museum. You walk in here, your jaw will drop once you walk in our house. And when kids see, you know, this guy didn't have the education. You know, he couldn't read and write. You know, I mean, look what he's done. But I'm a blessed guy. I have what's a photographic mechanical engineering type of mind where I actually see things before I ever build them. I'm very good at it. I don't have no blueprints, no drawings, no nothing. I get an idea, throw a piece of steel up on the bench and start building. So everything I built is built that way. No blueprints, no drawings. It's all in my head.
So tell us about the specs of the motorcycle. I understand it can go on the ground and running. It can do, you estimate, up to 150 miles per hour?
Yeah, well, the big thing is you can jack the power up. The higher you bring the pressure up in that thing, the more thrust it's going to put out. And it's a matter of being able to hang onto the handlebars is all part of it. But see, we built a dragster that went 412 miles an hour in 3.22 seconds. That's the world's fastest quarter mile car. But you're strapped inside of that. Now, it's a different thing than trying to hang onto a set of handlebars. But yes, I believe it could go pretty close to that, yes.
I also mentioned a rocket-powered toilet. Again, I have to ask the question, why?
Well, that one came about because the guys I hang around always know I'm building something. And I just finished building a twin-engine motorcycle. And I headed the show. A group of people are standing around me and said, okay, Kai, what are you going to build next? Facetiously, I said, well, about the only thing I don't have is a rocket-powered toilet. About 2 weeks later, this big burly guy comes over to my house. He says, Kai, I got something on the trunk for you. And here is this toilet. He says, I work for the state of Minnesota. I'm a plumber. Don't ask me any more questions. And he gave me this toilet. And it was pretty crusty looking. I threw it up on the table, sat back, and I ended up the SS flusher. And actually, it's a beautiful. You know, everything I build, it looks like art, but it's functional art. I really take my time when I build stuff, you know, piece by piece. Everything's all hand done on the bandsaw and polished and stuff like that. But that's how that came about, the SS flusher. I call it the SS flusher, America's secret weapon. I don't know why, but it's a good name.
Okay, and what exactly does a rocket-powered toilet do? I mean, what does
First off, if you go into my Facebook page, you'll see it in there. But it's a beautiful piece. So this is actually powered by nitrous oxide and plastic. I like different forms of propulsion. So we build a number of different types of rockets with other kinds of propulsion. It's powered by nitrous oxide and plastic. It runs on plastic. Plastic is the fuel.
So I guess when you gotta go, you gotta go.
Gotta go fast. Actually, this one can not only go, you can actually go on it, but you can go someplace with it.
And I also mentioned the jet-powered coffee pot. What does that do?
Oh, you don't have one of them?
No, I don't.
Well, I don't think anybody, I mean, you know, who else has got a jet-powered coffee pot? It's got a jet engine built inside of it, so it gets hot really quick. I think I'll make a popcorn maker next. I'm not sure. I'm just thinking about it.
I would love to be inside your head at night when you sleep and the dreams that you have, because your reality is out there. Your dreams must be on another galaxy.
They are. I mean, I'm telling you, my kids, my grandkids, they're artists. They can draw, they can paint. And I'm not an artist. I can barely draw a circle. I'm an artist in metal. But when I close my eyes, I see pictures that nobody's ever seen. I'll tell you that right now. And they kind of morph into one thing into another, and I'll finally go to sleep. But sometimes I do have some really weird experiences.
Through the years, I mean, this was a kind of a hobby for you. Through the years, what was your day job?
Well, my day job many, many years ago was I was a baker, actually. I can make a cake for you, too, if you want one. And I can decorate it. But But I got into racing when I was 16 years old. My first racing, I got motorcycles, and I built twin-engine motorcycles. Then I top gas dragsters, and then I went to fuel dragster, and then I went into rocket-powered cars. And we went from city to city or state to state. We ended up setting 72 state, national, international speed record. A lot of those speeds from way back in the 70s, they still hold. We still hold those records. We were running pretty close to 100 miles an hour, faster than the fastest top fuel car in the country at the time. And we were all highest paid. But yeah, but that led me out into Hollywood. And then I ended up working in the film business and doing special effects and stunt work. And I don't know, it just, one thing just goes into another, and it just keeps on. There's no rhyme or reason. All I'm going to say is I'm a pretty lucky guy.
Well, I've got to ask now, how does a guy who is a baker, who has made a rocket-powered toilet and a jet-powered coffee pot, how have you not made a rocket-powered oven?
Well, that'd be easy. just put a container back of my rocket, and I'll show you what an oven is.
Wow. It sounds like you are having a charmed life and enjoying everything you do. Can people visit and see some of the things that you've made? Because you said your house is kind of like a museum. Do you actually have a museum?
Yeah, our house is our museum. Yeah, there's 15 rooms in this house, and every room's got something different in it, yes. And now you walk in the door, you will not believe what is in here. Or you can go onto our YouTube. If you go to YouTube, you know, KY Michelson, you can go on there. You can see a lot of the things that we just talked about that are running, or things that we've done. But there's close to 200 videos in there of the crazy stuff that we've been involved in.
Crazy stuff indeed, but fascinating just as well. Kai, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Hey, thanks for having us on. Appreciate it a lot. You take care now.
Inventor Kai Michelson, maker of the beer-powered motorcycle. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0718, and you'll find the link to Kai's site and also his Facebook page that he mentioned. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Hi, I'm Peter Anthony Holder, and I'm the host of a new weekly podcast called Business Beyond Bizarre. What exactly is Business Beyond Bizarre?
A podcast of the slightly unusual.
Yeah, like she said. To be more specific, it's a show that features folks who have slightly quirky hobbies or businesses. It's a chance to meet some people who think outside the box and, metaphorically speaking, are off the beaten path. You'll meet folks like the creators of the fart spray called Liquid Ass, the woman who invented goat yoga, father and son undertakers who have perfected how to save your tattoos after you die, the founder of the religion Jediism, plus why you should be drinking gin made from elephant dung.
Business Beyond Bizarre.
Oh, there's a lot more where these came from. Give us a listen. Who knows? This show might just spark you to find your own slightly bizarre path.
Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program, so we won't have time for any more Stuff File news stories, although we do have an idiot of the day coming your way in just a few moments after our last guest here on the program. Ron Degenfelder is really into jigsaw puzzles, and he likes to share. To this point, his chickens have flown the coop, and he has turned the coop into the puzzle barn. It's a place where people are welcome to rent and return puzzles. Ron joins us via Zoom from Boston, New York. Hi, Ron.
Hello.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, I understand you've always been interested in puzzles, but this really took hold during the pandemic.
Yes, I used to do puzzles maybe growing up as a teenager, but as soon as I got my driver's license, I kind of stopped. But then during the pandemic, puzzling was a safe, fun activity you can do indoors. And so I did probably about 60 of them during the pandemic.
60? Wow. That's a lot of puzzles. And I guess the question comes from, or the idea of the puzzle barn comes from the question of, what do you do with the puzzle when you're done?
Yeah, exactly. I'm the type of person that does the puzzle just once. And I know I can donate them, but I was just keeping them in the garage in bins. And we had this chicken coop I converted into the puzzle barn. We were using it for storage and just got this crazy idea. I remember back in the day, Blockbuster video stores where you rent videos or movies, and also a combination of like a vegetable stand where people just stop by, pull in, always open. And so I put the two ideas together and created this puzzle barn.
Now, the age-old question, which came first, the chicken or the egg, was it a situation where you got the idea to do the puzzle barn and got rid of the chickens, or had you already gotten rid of the chickens and wondered what to do with the coop?
The second option. Unfortunately, our chickens were getting killed by predators, so like foxes and weasels. And so we had like 12 or 13 chickens. And when we got down to 6, we knew we had an issue. So we gave the rest of the chickens to a relative. And then the building sat there for probably maybe a year. I was storing like the rototiller, the lawnmower, and then, you know, just came up with this idea of displaying the puzzles and having people being able to rent them.
So how many puzzles do you now have in the puzzle barn?
Wow, good question. People can donate puzzles, and when they donate a puzzle, they get 2 free rentals. The puzzle barn has been open for 2 years. I started this in April of 2021. And so I have had people drop off hundreds and hundreds of puzzles. I could easily expand the puzzle barn. I would say it's about maybe a 6-foot by 8-foot little building. I think I have roughly close to 200 puzzles in the puzzle barn right now, with more puzzles in storage.
How many puzzles would you say you have in storage?
I would say probably another 100 to 200 puzzles. I mean, it's awesome that people are donating puzzles. It keeps the inventory fresh. There's always new puzzles that people can look at and rent. It makes it fun.
What are your favorite puzzles, and what are the most popular puzzles that you rent out?
I personally like the White Mountain brand of puzzle. They are a larger piece. Usually it's 1,000-piece puzzles. They also offer like 550 pieces. It's just a nice quality puzzle. And there's also another brand called Ravensburger. They are very good. I personally like pop culture. So I like puzzles that involve like TV shows or different references with anything to do with pop culture.
And the popular ones that are rented out, is it the same as your tastes or other tastes?
Well, I promote the White Mountain a lot. So a lot of people have, if they have not discovered it before the puzzle barn, they now know about White Mountain. But also there's a brand of puzzle, the Buffalo Puzzles. And they are actually a company right here in Buffalo, New York, which is about a half hour away from here. And they are very popular. There's an artist named Amy Stewart. It seems her designs are very popular. There's also a lady that used to paint pictures, a local artist named Thelma Winter. There's a few companies that have taken her pictures or her paintings and made them into puzzles. And those are fun because it's a local reference. I did a puzzle of one of her paintings, and then I actually, just about 2 miles away from the puzzle barn, is the actual house that was the painting based off. So that was fun to do the puzzle and then to go take a picture of the actual house.
How much do you rent them for?
$1 or $2, depending on the size of or how many pieces.
How long do people have to rent them?
Yeah, there's really no time frame. You know, I suggest several weeks to a month, but really, there's no late fees like from Blockbuster. Yeah, there's no time frame.
You mentioned the Blockbuster model. You know, with a Blockbuster video, the biggest thing you have to do is rewind it and return it. My question is, how can you be so sure that when you get a puzzle back that you have all the pieces?
Yeah, that's the risk of this puzzle barn. Many people, you know, they'll leave a note saying this was missing one piece. I will put a little sticker on the box announcing that, and then that just warns the next person. Yeah, a lot of these puzzles, you know, I even like to go to thrift stores finding cool puzzles. So there's always a risk. You know, missing a piece, some people don't mind it. Other people, it's almost like a forbidden puzzle. I just keep on thinking of, like, life. Life is not perfect. So there's always going to be, you know, a missing piece.
Now, you mentioned that near you is a place where puzzles are made. I understand it's about 40% of the puzzles for North America are made in this particular hamlet.
Oh, wow. That is very interesting. I did not know that fact. I just know that if you go into stores like Walmart or Target, there's the Buffalo brand. It's called Buffalo Games. I should really hook up with them.
Well, I was about to say, you should find some sort of deal with them because you're one of the greatest advertisements that they could possibly have.
True. Although they might not like my model or my philosophy, because another reason why I started this is, like many things, puzzles are getting expensive. A White Mountain puzzle full price is now about $19. And so I thought to myself, if I pay $19 and 10 other people pay $19, now we have 10 puzzles that really, what do you do with them? So you buy a different puzzle, I'll buy a different puzzle, we both do them, and then we kind of trade or rent them. So that was another idea. So I'm not sure. Maybe the puzzle companies are not a fan of the puzzle barn economically.
Do you envision the idea of perhaps franchising this like Blockbuster did before it went bust?
Yeah, that is a running joke with a lot of my customers. Everyone thinks this is such a great idea. And I always joke that I would love to have a franchise, just different one. I'm in the South Towns of Western New York, and it would be awesome if someone in the North Towns of, like north of Buffalo, would do a puzzle barn. I also was recently featured in People magazine under their smile section, where things are supposed to make you smile. I told the reporter that it would be awesome if this took off, and that there was a puzzle barn in every state.
Well, you said north of Buffalo. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Buffalo's near the water. Isn't north of Buffalo Canada?
True. Yes. Hey, Canada could have the puzzle barns.
Absolutely.
I meant more like Lockport, Wilson, Lewiston, Tonawanda, those little towns.
I saw the story of this in the paper, and I saw it online, and I've seen it on television. How has media and the press, how has the publicity helped with the puzzle barn?
Oh, it has definitely helped. My main source of advertisement or awareness has been Facebook. And I do realize that there are many people, especially the older crowd, that are not on Facebook. So it is awesome when I can advertise or get the word out with local newspapers. I was on the local TV channel. That was, the reporter did a really good job. He loved the idea that it was a chicken coop. It definitely has helped spread the word.
Well, congratulations on creating the puzzle barn. I'm just curious, how much time does it take, and what's your day job?
I used to be a teacher, and then I've had several other jobs. So I guess you would say that I'm retired from teaching. You know, it's fun when people pull in the driveway. Sometimes I go out and introduce myself, give them the 5-second tour. Other times, if I notice that it's a regular customer, that's fine. You know, people, I do not have to talk to them, although it is a lot of fun to talk about puzzles, which ones they did, which ones they liked. And then it seems like we always end up talking about life and the local area. And I've met neighbors that live down the street that I've never met before. And I did not know that, you know, they like to do puzzles. It's funny, when you talk to people out in society, you don't really ask people, do they like to do jigsaw puzzles? It's not like, you know, what's your major or what type of work do you do? It's not one of those common questions. So it's funny how puzzling is kind of kept quiet a little bit. It's fun to, like, you know, organize the puzzle barn and make sure it has a nice display, make sure all the all the pieces are in a plastic bag in each of the puzzles. There's a little work, but it's a lot of fun.
I have the perfect job for you. Since you're now retired and you're so into puzzles and you describe and share them with a lot of people, have you thought of writing a review of crossword puzzles?
Oh, a review of jigsaw puzzles.
Or jigsaw puzzles, sorry, yes.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, that's interesting. Every White Mountain puts a lot on Facebook, and they will send out a survey of possible puzzle designs, and they want people to rate them or leave feedback. And I enjoy doing that. It's fun to look at what possibly could be a puzzle. That's enjoyable. But you're right, you know, when you do a lot of puzzles, you kind of become a puzzle snob. And that's, you know, it's just kind of funny.
Well, I hope that one of the companies will make a puzzle of the puzzle coop.
Yeah, that would be good.
Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us, Ron. It's an ingenious idea, and it sounds like a lot of fun. I remember doing puzzles with my siblings back in the day, and it's a fun process, and you've turned it into an even bigger deal.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for having me on your show.
Ron Dagenfelder, the owner and operator of the Puzzle Barn. You can go to my website at thestuffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0718, and you'll find the link to Ron's Facebook page that you can become a member of. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Two people were arrested and charged with drug-related crimes in South Carolina after authorities discovered cocaine was hidden inside a fake pregnant belly allegedly worn by one of the suspects. Police were conducting proactive patrol along Interstate 85 last month when deputies pulled over Anthony Miller and Kamika Mitchum. The sheriff's office said deputies became suspicious when Miller and Mitchum gave conflicting information about Mitchum's alleged due date. When Mitchum realized deputies were becoming more skeptical about her story, she attempted to make a run for it, which resulted in the drugs falling out of the rubber belly. The sheriff's said it collected over 1,500 grams of cocaine during the traffic stop. Miller and Mitchum are both facing charges for trafficking over 400 grams of cocaine. If convicted, the duo could face up to 30 years in prison and a $200,000 fine. Now why? Oh, why? If you're going to all the trouble to fake a pregnancy in order to smuggle drugs and thwart the cops, would you not have your backstory straight with the simple information of when is your due date? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0718. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links to all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0718. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including kdxradio.com, truetalkradio.com, over the air on World FM in New Zealand, WLSL LPFM in Dade City, Florida, KZZH LPFM in Eureka, California, CKUW FM in Winnipeg, CFMU in Hamilton, CKLU in Sudbury, Local 107.3 FM in St. John, CHSR in Fredericton, and also streaming on just about any streaming service your little heart desires. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. I'm your announcer, your name here. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Ben Patrick Johnson. What am I being paid for this? What? You're flipping kidding me. Okay, that's it. Turn off the microphone.